Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your health, your well-being, the well-being of your family and your community, and what's going on in our larger society and on this planet. Each week, we connect the dots between what's going on with our water, food, earth, and air, what's going on with our communities, what's going on with our economy, what's going on with our society, and what's going on with the global ecological system, the living system in which we all reside, and which supports our biological well-being and our life itself. Each week on the show, this is what we discuss with different thought leaders, experts, advocates, filmmakers, poets, scientists, doctors, authors, and, you know, everyone else who's covering a different facet of our interconnected world. And, you know, I'm a longstanding journalist covering the environment, food, and health. We talk about policy and science, but we also talk about the attitudes, the values, the understandings that we need to have to really address the enormous potentials and challenges of the time we're living in. The show has been on. It's now in its ninth year. All previous shows featuring people like Bill McKibben, Elizabeth Colbert, Greg Palast, Josh Fox, a whole bunch of other people are right there in the archives for you to enjoy at connectthedots.podbean, like Boston Baked Beans, but podbean.com. So, you know, we bring this, it's really a library of how to care for each other and the earth, a sound library. So on today's show, I am really thrilled to be welcoming two people, to youth activists and organizers and leaders from the Sunrise Movement. They are actually going to be the second Sunrise Youth Leaders that we featured on Connect the Dots. And as regular listeners to the show know, I am super impassioned about the Green New Deal and its potential to become the movement of all movements and, you know, bring up a big vision of how to turn a major corner in our society in a critically needed direction. So we'll be talking in the first half hour with Sunrise's new Deputy Communications Director, and in the second half hour, we'll be talking with the New York State Sunrise Director. So this is going to be a really terrific show, and we'll learn more about upcoming things with Sunrise, too. So my first guest is Sophie Karasek, and she is the new Deputy Communications Director at Sunrise. That means that she has the job of helping put out the word and letting people know about all of the exciting developments and new initiatives that Sunrise has going on. And as you know, the Sunrise Movement is a national movement with people all over the nation. You know, the next generation is rising up and not taking delays and no's and maybe some days for an answer, but really grasping to, you know, the till to push forward and you know, and to address climate now while we still have the opportunity to intervene in what will otherwise sadly become a really difficult trajectory for all life on Earth. And it's already has evolved in a way that is far less than optimal. But by joining forces, the hope is that we can do something about it. So welcome to Connect the Dots, Sophie Karasek. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I just have to ask, you know, what is your story? Like, what drew you to the Sunrise Movement? Like, you know, how did you become aware of it? How long have you been involved? You know, what is it that, you know, kind of compelled you to get involved?
Yeah, so I actually got involved in the climate movement first when I was 16 years old. I had actually lived in Denmark for a few years when I was growing up as a kid. My mom is, and my family is over there. And I had always been really struck by how differently the country was addressing climate change and actually powering its economy with renewable energy solutions in a way that I just wasn't seeing when I was living in the United States. So I got really passionate about this when I was in high school. And, you know, I would keep going back to Denmark over the summers and, like, just seeing all of the windmills that would be all over the countryside that actually powers, like, 40% of, like, electricity in Denmark. It's just huge how much they rely on wind power. And also that the public transit system there was so much better than what I was used to in Boston. And even though it was good in Boston, you know, it wasn't the way that it was in Denmark. And that I would also bike to and from school every day and really enjoyed that as well. So that's how I originally got involved, was just seeing in my personal life how differently it could be if we lived in a place that facilitated a just transition.
Mm-hmm. So for you, the sense that this is out of reach just seems almost, you know, kind of absurd or untrue, because you've actually seen it working and functioning, and it's like, why can't it happen here? What do you feel are the biggest obstacles to this happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that over many years, there's been a hesitancy to take on the climate crisis at the scale at which it's demanded. And that's part of why Sunrise has really taken off over the last, like, 2 years, is that youth leaders who have a lot of things at stake have had to come together from all corners of the climate movement to actually think about what are we going to do to address this really this huge problem of the climate crisis and the issues that climate catastrophe pose to us, but also addressing the problems of economic inequality that have also plagued our country for so long.
And, you know, how do you explain why these two things go together? Because, you know, it's clear to many that they do, and then some people are like, why are they going together, you know? How do you explain that?
Yeah, so, I mean, to be frank, for the last 30 years, we've had enormous problems with wage stagnation in the United States. Lots of people have also been losing their jobs because of automation and the big changes that have happened with the rise in the internet. So these are huge transformations in our economy that aren't going away anytime soon. And a lot of people are feeling that it's really hard just to get through the day to day, and these consequences of the changing economy aren't going to get any easier by just sitting by and not doing anything about it. And so why this really goes together is because we also need to address the ongoing threats that the climate catastrophe, the climate crisis causes. And so this is actually an amazing opportunity for us to both get folks really great, high-paying jobs that are helping them put food on the table for their families, keeping their communities together instead of having all the young folks leave to the cities, like really being able to actually invest in communities. This is something that would be able to both address the need to transform our economy rapidly and our, you know, entire transportation, food, and energy systems, and also address that there is a huge transformation happening in the way that the economy is structured and the kinds of jobs that people are currently working in.
So this would open a door of opportunity for people to get involved in these new kinds of jobs rather than being economically reliant on doing work that is actually undermining the viability of the planet. And that is a tremendous dilemma. And I think also when people have been over many years making those bad bargains, you know, where this the kind of job that's available is in fact a job that is you know, in one of these large industries that, you know, is having a harmful or mixed or, you know, outright toxic effect, it's like, you know, people develop an allegiance because it's their economic survival. And then, you know, they've also get accustomed to sort of rationalizing that, you know, it's too idealistic to think that you could actually do good and do well, you know. And for some people, it's been out of reach to do well. So, you know, this is a big corrective for that potentially. But this is, I mean, how do you see this evolving, you know, over like the next 5 years, for example?
Yeah, so we recognize that this is going to have to be powered by people. And so in the short term, we are going on a road to the Green New Deal tour to bring the Green New Deal to all corners of the country. There are lots of events that are going to be happening in April, May, and June, and people can actually create their own town hall event by going to our website at sunrisemovement.org to learn how they can hold their own Green New Deal town hall. But so that's what's happening in the short term, is that we know that this is a popular plan, that people believe that we have to address the climate crisis and that we need to really revitalize the American economy. And so we want to really make sure that folks have an opportunity to share their stories of why this would be useful and helpful for them in their everyday lives. Over the next 5 years, you know, this is something that the Green New Deal is something that that just absolutely has to be a top issue in the 2020 elections. And we're already seeing that it is something that a lot of candidates are embracing. Nearly all of the major Democratic contenders for the presidency are in support of the Green New Deal. And so this is something that we really have to continue to hammer on as being one of the most important issues that is facing the country going into 2020. And that importantly, if candidates want the vote of the votes of millennial youth, then they are going to seriously have to address this crisis that we're facing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. What do you feel about candidates, for example, who give nominal support? You know, I'm in favor of the Green New Deal, but they are, you know, still willing to accept fossil fuel money, for example.
Well, so we believe that there absolutely can't be money from CEOs that's continuing to corrupt our politics. And we, you know, have seen this for many years, that the climate movement or the ability to address the climate crisis has been stifled by a wealthy few CEOs who want to make sure that they line their pockets at the expense of the rest of us. So that is something that, again, we really have to make sure that they're hearing from their constituents that this is something that is important to them, is that our representatives in Congress have our backs, not the backs of just a few corporate donors.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm 100% in support of that. I am actually the first news cycle reporter to regularly cover the plan to frack, you know, and put in pipelines and wells and, you know, and all of that in New York State and in Pennsylvania. So I was covering fracking and the basic on the Huffington Post for 5 years or something. And then others joined in, you know, a year later and a year later, and other people joined in and did it. And then we got a moratorium in 2014. So, you know, It's like once you really get a close-up look, and then we've also seen problems with pipelines, which are, you know, have a very harmful effect because of the methane release and everything, as well as the drilling, the compressor stations, the power plants, the ports, the LNG export ports. You know, there isn't, and then at use as well, you know. And so fracking was originally promised as a bridge to renewables. It isn't. It's represented an enormous infrastructural investment. And so, you know, in covering that issue and all of its permutations over many years, you know, you just see that also it's made me distrustful of people who say something like, I'm an environmentalist, but I have fossil fuel investments, or I'm still, you know, I won't take a pledge or something, because, you know, anyone can call themselves anything, but they, you know, when you've seen it for a time, this is the, you know, you guys already know it, but this is like, I've lived this. You know, they'll say one thing and do the other, and politicians do that all the time. And so I think this is an area I really applaud you for being so vigilant and really, you know, keeping your eye on that, because there are so many things that could distract one and say, well, he's a nice guy, or, you know, I like her. But if they're not willing to take a strong stand about fossil fuels, you know, we have, what is it now, 10 or 12 years in which to intervene, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, part of why what we have been talking so much about is the importance of facilitating a just transition, that it's not just about the economic reliance that communities have had on fossil fuels. It's also about the culture that communities have created around these industries, and that, you know, it's, again, a few fossil fuel CEOs that stand to benefit at the expense of the rest of us, and that includes people who have been directly on the front lines of working in these industries but end up having really bad health complications or are working without labor protections. And so this is about really taking a stand on behalf of workers as well.
That's incredibly important, isn't it? That's a huge thing. And that's also true, as we're seeing now, in the food agriculture industry, with a number of lawsuits where people's lives have been ruined and they have developed very serious diseases due to exposure, you know, through farming and agriculture to glyphosate and other harmful chemicals, you know. And so, yeah, there's higher incidence of all kinds of, I was originally a health reporter, of all kinds of terrible diseases, and yet, you know, we're not really doing the science to, and, you know, it gets done belatedly in these lawsuits, you know, to say this is not healthy for people to be exposed to, you know. And, you know, at the beginning, some people were saying that, and they were like, oh, no, what do you know? The science doesn't say that. And it's like, well, we're not really doing the independent science. And then finally, when it's done, it turns out that, you know, thousands of people have been harmed. And so, yeah, that's also, it's the, you know, we are the environment. We partake of the environment. Our health is dependent on the environment, as you know. So those are all terrific initiatives. Tell us a little bit about the timing and what will be happening with the upcoming town halls.
Sure. So in mid to late April, we are going to be kicking off our Road to the Green New Deal tour, where we'll be bringing the Green New Deal to all corners of the country. We have folks from almost every state that are signed up to host their own town hall, and these will be kicking off just in a few short weeks. And some of the flagship stops that we'll be having, we'll have really cool speakers who are on the forefront of this debate, such as Ayanna Pressley and Senator Ed Markey, as well as Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. And so, you know, lots of folks that have really been on the forefront of pushing for the Green New Deal are going to be joining us on the tour. And so we really Yeah, I know. Yeah, so we really encourage folks to either RSVP to go to a town hall in their community on our website at sunrisemovement.org, or to sign up to host their own town hall in their community if there isn't one happening near them.
And what is the date of the town hall, and how soon do they have to sign up in order to host one if they were going to be hoping to do that?
Yeah, so they're happening sporadically from the end of April to, I think, early June, but most will be happening around mid-May. So I feel like generally the sooner the better, but they will be happening for the next few months.
Terrific. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
And will some of them also be live streamed so that people you know, elsewhere can see them? Will that be happening? Or?
Yeah, definitely.
That's great. That means that people can go, once the schedule is announced on your website, then people can sign up, they can find out when it's happening, they can either go to one or they can, you know, watch the live streams of several of them. Sounds like really outstanding. And like, what are your goals for, you know, having these town halls? It's, you know, I mean, in truth, you know, politics has become kind of like, oh, it's divisive, you know, maybe we shouldn't deal with it, it might create ill will in the community. Are you going to have some kind of opportunity for people to, you know, kind of engage in open dialogue and be supported in, you know, feeling safer around having political discussions, you know, around something that we all care about, like our survival and the survival of our, you know, species and everything? Do you think you'll be able to cut through that?
Yeah, I mean, so like I said, the Green New Deal is incredibly popular, both amongst Democrats and Republicans. So this is something that the public supports. And in order to really get this to move in Congress and also to establish the Green New Deal and the taking on the climate crisis as a litmus test in 2020, you know, folks are going to have to make their voices heard, or else that it's not going to happen. So we are taking the Green New Deal to all corners of the country because we know that if the politicians hear from us, then it's much more likely that we'll actually be able to get this done in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you famously, members of the Sunrise Movement famously have gone, you know, into the offices of, you know, senators and congresspeople and, you know, basically gone in as a group and said, this is what we want. So it's not like even, you know, oh, well, they don't care about what we think, and they're just listening to their corporate donors, and, you know, if I call their office, I get a recorded message or something. You're willing to do what it takes, you know, given, you know, the challenge that we, you know, have to address here. And, I mean, how shall I say this? Do you give each other strength? How can other people learn to follow your example and, you know, sort of take a stand? I mean, do you think people really want to on some level? And, you know, you've become so popular and the Green New Deal has become so popular because people really want that opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, look, we need to have a solution that's actually at the scale of the problem that we're facing. And young people have a lot of things at stake. I mean, like, I am in my 20s, people that are in my friend groups, you know, we've already been talking about, well, maybe we will never be grandparents, or maybe we'll never even be parents. And so there's a lot at stake for us and for our families by, you know, choosing not to do anything. And so we're feeling those impacts and the potential implications of what decisions we make here really acutely. And I think that that's why we have advocated for the Green New Deal, is that we actually need a solution that is on par with what science demands, and that that hasn't happened up until this point. So we think that it's something that needs to happen, and also that obviously there are a lot of people who agree that it needs to happen because it's become so popular. It's something that is a next step that is actually the scale of the problem, which is unlike anything that's been proposed before.
It certainly is. And, you know, congratulations and more power to you. I am, you know, hoping to invite you back and feature other people from Sunrise Movement. You know, I would love to have you guys regularly appearing on the show with whatever, you know, messages and initiatives you're, you know, next putting out there. Because I think, I'd be thrilled to do it. It's wonderful talking to you. And, you know, it's kind of like it's, you know, the tendency of human nature and our focus is that, you know, we just get involved in our daily lives, whatever it is, in our place, in our this, and, you know, we just kind of look at that, and we don't get a bigger picture. And, you know, you've really, you know, you and all of the other Sunrise youth leaders have really opened up a big picture that, you know, in a way that's urgently timely, and we need to look at it, and we need to be reminded, and we need to get involved. So, you know, thank you so much for what you're doing, really. And, you know, we'll be moving on to the second half of our show. We've been talking to Sophie Karasek, who's Assistant Communications Director of the Sunrise Movement, the wonderful youth leadership movement that is stepping up big time for climate and inviting us to do the same and join in and participate. So, listeners, I hope you'll go to the website. I hope you'll get involved, go to a town hall, initiate a town hall, sign up to stay involved with the Sunrise Movement. Thank you so much for being with us today, Sophie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we'll now be moving on to our second guest. So stay with us, listeners, for the next half of Connect the Dots.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the second half of our show, and we're going to be talking with another Sunrise Movement leader and activist. Matthew Miles Goodrich is an organizer, teacher, and writer in Brooklyn, New York. He also serves as New York State Director of Sunrise, and there's a lot of activity in every state of the union, and certainly New York qualifies as a hub where there's a lot that can be done to seed the way for both a federal passage of the Green New Deal, as we've been discussing, as well as for enacting it in our states, cities, regions, and various localities. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Miles. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
You're also the editor of a magazine called Guernica Magazine, is that correct?
Yeah, my role is digital editor, so which basically is a fancy title for helping out with social media.
Okay, I got it. But you yourself also are a very adept writer and communicator. So, you know, when it comes to the Green New Deal message that, you know, your generation is bringing forth, do you feel that the communication is getting through, that you're reaching people? You know, what are you finding? Are you finding a lot of people joining? Are you finding, you know, sort of confusion, resistance? I mean, what are you seeing on the ground in terms of your organizing and the response to Sunrise's message?
I think that the message that we've put out to the American people over the past 4 or 5 months has resonated unlike anything else the climate movement has offered before. The idea that this is a moment of crisis, and we have to meet the crisis with bold and ambitious policy that can actually meet the level of the challenge while also improving the lives of millions of Americans. That's a big promise. That's the promise of the Green New Deal. And it's far more resonant to Americans who are worried about their health care, who are worried about their jobs, who are worried about their children, than it is, say, a carbon tax, for example, or some of the more technocratic means that have been on the table for the past decade.
I really like that you bring that up, and I think it's an important corrective, because in effect, some of what you describe as technocratic solutions have, as well as, you know, the so-called market-based solutions, have become a way of kind of pushing our activity and intervention on this very short-term fuse, you know, that's already, you know, burning, you know, down the line. In other words, we don't have to deal with it because there'll be a technological solution, or, you know, the market will take care of it. There's an inherent problem in both those things, one being that it hasn't taken care of it, and we don't have what look like very good solutions. But is there an inherent problem with kind of trusting in major technology and entrepreneurship as, you know, the kind of only avenue out of something that arises both in our own behaviors, in our society's orientation, as well as in our relationship to the living system that we live on?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the innovation is going to be part of the solution, right? We need to make better batteries that can store wind and solar energy. We're going to need to innovate new technologies to help with invest in public transit. That's absolutely part of the solution. But we've seen that in the late stages of capitalism and neoliberalism, that the benefits of a lot of the innovation that's subsidized by public money goes to the very top. It goes to the folks that are already owners, that are already, who have the money to seed these ventures. And so I don't want to live in a world in which we have renewable energy and then also a billionaire class of Elon Musk's that have total control over the energy system. I don't want to just recreate the fossil fuel economy on a renewable scale. I want a democratic and distributed energy system, in which homeowners, in which individuals can help create their own home or create their own energy on their home with the resources that the world provides for us. And so I think that crucial to the Green New Deal is this idea of democratizing the energy system and bringing economic justice to the table when it has not been in the past.
That's really important. You know, one of the things I noted recently in the last, couple of weeks since the time of this recording, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, of course, has been the congresswoman who has introduced the new Green New Deal resolution and has been, you know, your biggest political elected official champion of this and really responded to your call and came up with this. And she has strongly emphasized the inclusive nature and you know, the sort of urgency of including that as part of the plan. But when she was recently on MSNBC with Chris Hayes in a Green New Deal town hall, you know, there are a lot of people looking to temporize. Oh, well, can we just leave off this part of it? Why do we have to include that? That's too much. And so, you know, I notice among neoliberals and some of the Democratic leaders, there's kind of a tendency to say, yeah, we have to deal with the climate problem, but we want to deal with it in a kind of disconnected way. We don't want to deal with everything together, one thing at a time.
Yeah.
That's too much. I'd love to hear your response to, you know, why this plan is big picture and so inclusive of addressing so many different things that need redirection in our society.
I mean, the climate crisis is an utterly existential crisis that affects every part of society right now. It's not; it cannot be siloed into a single issue in any way than the fossil fuel economy can be siloed into into one single issue. Is that the crisis of climate change is a healthcare problem. It's a jobs problem. It's an education problem, and it needs to be addressed as such. And so when we rise to the challenge of the climate crisis, when we have our moonshot moment, Representative Ocasio-Cortez likes to say, we need to be taking care of everybody. We need to be making sure that the folks that have hit the hardest by not only climate change and fossil fuel extraction and combustion, but also by the energy transition, are taken care of, and that they have access, not just access, they have health care that they can rely on as the planet burns, pretty much. And as we're trying our best to transition off the fossil fuel economy that we have right now. And to be frank, the people who say that it's too much don't understand the crisis, don't understand the enormity of this problem. And that's why I think that young people are really leading the charge here, is that we understand that we have lived from crisis to crisis to crisis, and have seen our leaders address them with wholly inadequate policies. And so we need to go big, because our lives depend upon it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you have the energy to do it. You have the vision to do it. You have the motivation to do it. All of that is there. I think what's also surprising for, more mature activists and journalists like myself is to see that, as you guys were just, playing like a little while ago, how did you, just a few years back or whatever, how did you evolve, and why did your generation evolve with more penetrating and synthesizing, I would say, is even more important, insight into both the deep causes and the interconnectedness, which older adults can't perceive, actually.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it's because that we have the millennial generation and younger we've careened from crisis to crisis, from 9/11, for example, and wars that were sold to us under deception, from the economic crisis that wiped out middle class wealth across the country, to the gun epidemic crisis that we've seen children shot dead in our schools, to the climate crisis. In which our futures are at stake. I mean, for myself, that's one of the first times that I was truly aware of politics for the first time. That my family tried to insulate me from the political weather, the political storms outside. But as soon as my family started to get hit by the Great Recession in 2007 and 2008, and my family was hit by some pretty serious medical sicknesses. My mother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and my father was diagnosed with cancer around the same time, when we were losing a tremendous amount of the wealth that they had worked all their lives to accumulate. And without Obamacare, for example, my father would probably be dead right now. So we've seen the benefit of progressive moments like Obama, but then I've also seen the toll that the Great Recession took on my family, and my parents divorced after facing those health crises and those and the tightness of the belt after the financial recession. And meanwhile, we had a president that promised to stem the rising tides, and instead bragged about how much oil production that he exported in the years as president. And so I think that all bets are off now. Like we were told to trust that Hillary Clinton would take care of Donald Trump no problem. And again, our leaders, the elite class, the establishment politicians, utterly failed us. And so we see that we need to take matters into our own hands. And that's what Sunrise is all about. And then we've seen how powerful that is when the generation that is most at risk stands up and fights for ourselves.
What's it like for you all? One of the things that I think is also really different is the way you all interact as the group. There's a group ethos and a sense of participation that is very different amongst the Sunrise Movement leaders from, you know, what I've seen in older generation people where, you know, it's all about achieving comparable levels of success, you know, the psychology of I win, you lose, which actually AOC was speaking about very movingly on Instagram yesterday. She was also talking about regenerative agriculture. It's like your group ethos is really, or appears to be, far more unified rather than competitive or at odds, which was more so for older generations. Is that an illusion,
yeah,
or is that really true?
No, I think that's absolutely true. I think that, that when we're faced with the rotting out of our of the center of our democracy, when we're faced with the corrosive nature of that billionaires and millionaires hold over our politics, that we don't have much of a choice than to unite. We don't have much of a choice than to see the common links in our struggle. And we've seen the power of coming together in that. And the Green New Deal is absolutely the product of that analysis, that we can't actually silo these things from each other. We have to meet them all head on, because this is a generational crisis, and it has to be addressed on the scale of the crisis.
Yeah, that's really true, and it makes a lot of sense. What is coming up next for the Green New Deal? I know, and we've talked about a little bit in the first half of the show with Sophie about the coming Green New Deal town halls. What is really the goal of going all across the nation and starting these conversations and these presentations in various communities? Are you trying to mostly connect with other young people everywhere? Are you also trying to educate all ages? I mean, what are your kind of bottom line goals for that?
Well, when the Green New Deal was polled by the Yale Climate Change Communication Center in December, a couple months ago, they found that 80% of Americans supported the key components of the Green New Deal, including the jobs guarantee, and you know, transitioning off fossil fuels. But we also saw that 80% of Americans had not yet heard much about the Green New Deal. That when they heard the Green New Deal, they weren't quite sure what it meant. And so the purpose of the tour is to bring the Green New Deal, the promise of the Green New Deal, and the crisis of climate change, the devastation of climate change to the American people, and that. We've had tremendous success in targeting Congress right now, right? More than 100 members of Congress have signed on to the Green New Deal resolution that Senator Ed Markey and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have put forth in the House and the Senate. But ultimately, it's going to be the American people that are going to call for this, that are going to vote in the politicians that can make it happen. And so what we really want to do is make sure that it's like build a very large tent of folks that are going to be affected by climate change and the energy transition. So we're going to Iowa to talk to farmers and ranchers who are supportive of a Green New Deal, right? We're going to Kentucky to talk about the effects of coal of the Green New Deal on the coal mining communities there. We're going to Chico, California, right next to Paradise, where the campfire utterly is devastating this summer, to talk to how we're going to recover our communities from the climate-fueled disasters that climate change inflicts upon us, and the idea is to show the American people that this is a crisis and that we're coming together, and that old and young, of all races and all creeds, that the Green New Deal is the promise of the new American century, and I think that we can get there.
That sounds really great. You know, one thing I'm interested in, too, because it actually harkens back, coincidentally, to the very first conversation we had at the New York Hub in Brooklyn, which was when I first took the Sunrise Pledge, was at that meeting, and we had a brief conversation thereafter. And, you know, when you mention Iowa and the farmers and the ranchers, that gets us a bit into the regenerative agriculture topic, which is... It's pretty interesting, you know, because it both is obviously can produce more and healthier food as well as having an impact on climate. I mean, are, you know, can you speak to that? Is that something that, you know, the folks in the Sunrise folks in urban environments are kind of, you know, connect, feel like grasp and kind of are into, or, you know, what's your view of that?
Yeah, I mean, and from my perspective, I'm much more on the, as a New Yorker, I'm not as connected to the land as I would like to be, but I know that there's tremendous political benefit to this. Like, not only because big agriculture and monopolies hold such an enormous sway over the food system and over our democracy, but also that they're screwing over individual families and farmers that have the best practices for our food systems, and that coupled with the fact that rural America plays such an outsized role in our democracy because of how our federal system is structured, it means that we need to reach out, that we need to get you know rural communities on board, and that I think that we can really push back against the narrative that this is Trump country or that, you know, these people deny climate change or whatever, but know that the Green New Deal is an opportunity to break up the big agribusiness to make our food system far more healthy.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. So, you know, it's kind of like it sounds to me like also what you're saying is that along with your kind of your generation's consciousness of like and feeling a connection to rather than sort of dissociation from what's going on with the earth also extends into the land, into the food, into, you know, into the earth, the soil, and all of it is kind of part of the same sort of caring environmentalism that is really kind of at the core of the motivation here is like, you know, our planet isn't just for, you know, kind of stripping or, you know, filling with chemicals or taking from, but it's actually something to feed into and to restore and to care for as it cares for us. I mean, you know, so that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that what we're trying to do is rebuild the American dream and rebuild America and invest in the communities that have made that have made our country what it is and that also have been neglected by the elite, by the millionaires and the billionaires and by a corrupt establishment. And that means taking care of all people. I mean, taking care of all communities.
That makes complete sense. I think we come full circle here in our conversation. So we're coming to the end of Connect the Dots. Where can our listeners go in order to, you know, find a town hall in their area and participate? I want to just reiterate that for anyone listening that would be interested. Where do they go to online?
Yeah, they can go to sunrisemovement.org/tour, and we have a little widget that you plug in your zip code and you can see all the events that are happening in your area. There are four stops in major cities and then smaller town halls and forums that local folks are putting on. So there are a ton in New York City that are happening, for example.
Oh, goody. I'll look forward to seeing you and the rest of the crew in New York then on April 22nd. That's coming up. So if you're interested in attending and participating, listeners, go to that website and find out what's happening near you and plan to go. Well, thank you so much for being with us today on Connect the Dots and speaking to the listeners of the program, Miles Goodrich of the Sunrise Movement. You know, it's really been great having you on the show, and I'd love to really...
Yeah.
take every opportunity to keep hearing your voices, yours and other Sunrise folks. And, you know, I think it's really an important and continual reminder that there can be another and must be another way, you know, and this is it.
Absolutely agree. So
thank you for joining us, and thank you, listeners, for being with us on this edition of Connect the Dots. If you enjoyed the show, it's going to be available later today and onward into the future on our archive, which is at connectthedots.podbean.com. And so you can find this and other past shows on regenerative agriculture, on climate, on fracking, on the food system, on, you know, how the psychology of how we're going to deal with this time, as well as on politics, on our Connect the Dots archive. You can also look for Sunrise on Facebook and online on their website to find out about different events in your area. Join a hub. That would be fantastic. I'm a longstanding reporter, and I report on Truth Out, Common Dreams, Organic Bites, and other venues. So you can look for some of my works and articles there. And be with you next week. And as I always say at the end of the show, stand tall, keep marching forward, in company with all our relations.